Bring it a little down, cause I got that bassy boom. What do we got here? The world going to shit, don't mind me. You know what I've been doing, audience, and I hope that you agree with me. Take more walks, please. Spend the time that you either doom scroll. You can doom scroll while you walk, but just walk, okay? Aim for I don't know, 30 minutes. Just 30 minutes a day. Walk around and do nothing. Just walk around. Maybe listen to a podcast. Maybe doom scroll. Whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do with your life. But You need air, you need oxygen, you need grass touching. Grass touching is very important in this economy. The amount of grass touching that is required in order to sustain yourself in this economy is very important. And I abide by that metric. If you don't touch grass, then you will not exist in a happy life. You will not exist at all. I will... I just needed to make that clear because I realized the beauty of going for daily walks, and I just needed to share it, okay? Look, no one's going to be listening to this right now anyway, but I just needed people to know that. Anyway. This has been your PSA announcement. It's like a 1950s, like, fitness commercial. Go outside! Drink oxygen, please! We're all dying! Toodaloo! Ladies and germs, welcome back to Independence and Nels. I'm trying something new, alright? Don't try to get on my case about this, alright? Gosh, I try something new and immediately everyone's like, no, stop, you can't make weird noises with your mouth to intro the show. I can do whatever I want, this is my show, alright? I can exist in my own world, and I can, it's fine, I'm just a little sad, it's okay, it's okay, we got a big lineup for everybody today on the show, of course, as always, and forevermore, this is our 25th episode. We're like a quarter of the way to my goal. That's not. I think I'm realistically, if we're talking realistically, I think my goal was to get to, I think, 60 episodes. So we're almost halfway there, ladies and gents. I hope we'll have enough conversation to talk about. But of course we will. An hour of Dominic content for Independent Incidentals on Radio Laurier. Nothing says progress like a sentence like that. Well, either way, today we're going to be talking about Into the Breach, which I've covered in the first season back during the after-class show that I hosted a year ago. It's been almost 2 years now. It's crazy. Anyway, we got a bit of news to cover first, though, if you will bear with me. I just need to get a few things off my chest pretty quickly. Right now. So, I'm sure if you've, if you looked at the Steam store page once or twice, I'm sure you've seen a title prop up a few times before. There's this new game in town, apparently. Well, it's been out for at least, I think, a couple of weeks. I think probably around a month, give or take. This game particularly is a gacha game. Perfect. That's the sound effect I was looking for. Thank you, soundboard. Thank you. So why do I want to describe this game to you? Basically, the core concept, because this is not a part of it, I just wanted to quickly talk about it and talk about specifically what I see wrong in it. Essentially, the game revolves around you collecting horse girls, but not in the sense of them enjoying horse, but them being horse, but not in the sense of them having equine legs, perhaps, or being some sort of centaur, minotaur creature of mythology. No, these creatures, these women, they race, but they have horse tail and horse ears, but they go as fast as horse. But they aren't horse, really. They're just humanoid creatures that have the soul of horse. I'm going to leave it at that, because the more I talk about this, the more I'm going to lose brain cells. So the essential concept here is you train horse girls. You train these horse girls to... I'm not reading off a script. Trust me. You train these horse girls to race in races against other horse girls, and you have to spend a couple... It's a bit of roguelike elements, where you have to train them over the course of a couple of days, and there's risks of them having injury, there's risk of them losing mood and stuff like that based on how hard you push them and stuff like that. It's something that's drawn people towards this game a lot. I just want to quickly go over what I see when I look up Umumuse, Pretty Derby, the video game. If I go to news about this game, let me just read off the first five. Umumuse Pretty Derby, the best TM Opera O build. Pretty Derby supporter car tier list. A gacha racer with idle ambitions. Best winning ticket build. Pretty Derby, once I figured out these seven things, I got way better at Umumuse Pretty Derby. Wake up! Sorry. Look, listen. I hate to break it to you, but this is not. I saw this game. I was watching a streamer play it. What's his name? Northern Lion play it specifically because it got recommended to him a billion times. It was pitched to him as a roguelike, which he's very well known for because he has at least 1,000 Binding of Isaac video episodes on his YouTube channel from the heyday once it was popular during the Newgrounds 2010s era. During that Flash era where games like Binding of Isaac and a bunch of other indie games became more popular and more accessible to people. So he got pitched this game, and he started playing it a lot. And now I can't watch him anymore. I hate to break it to you. Look, I it's one of my favorite streamers out there. Don't get me wrong. But I like watching it. That's the problem. It's addicting to watch. Just seeing the progress put into training them and then racing them and having like their ult activate at a specific time. Obviously, it's crack cocaine. There's nothing around that. But can we just call it that? Do we have to, like, significantly say that the game is cool and interesting? There's another streamer I watch, way less notoriable. Slime, not Slime Sickle, but Slime Wire, Slime IRL, as he's called on Twitch. And he specifically said, he called it out, specifically on the concept of the game. And he was in a tournament with this guy and a bunch of other streamers as well. I hate to break it to you, it's a disease. You can enjoy it, just call it a disease. You don't have to necessarily say that you have to improve. I'm not saying that. You can be in this Umumuse Pretty Derby chamber that you've created for yourself. This sort of prison that you've trapped yourself inside of. You can do that. Don't get me wrong. You can exist inside of this. I'm not denying that. What I am saying is you have to call it that. You have to at least be acknowledgeable of the fact that you are trapped in this cell that you've created for yourself. Right? Have a little shame. Just a little bit, all right? Just have a little shame when you play these kind of games, right? I'm not saying that I'm like, obviously I have shame when I play video games. I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that you can't justify this. There's no conceivable way where you can justify this game. That being said, special week, am I right? Anyway. I had to get it out there. I'm sorry. It's been brewing for quite a while, and I just had to say it. Look, enjoy the game. Just know that it's... Yeah. Anyway. Another thing came out. Gabe Newell had a recent interview where he said these fine words. he'll quote him specifically. He was talking about the direction of AI and the fact of it taking a bunch of coding jobs, because the fact is that it's way better at making code than most even senior developers nowadays. That's what it's coming out. That's what the people are reporting about. And he specifically said there'll be a funny situation where he foresees that you won't, people who will code, who know how to code, will be less effective than people who don't know how to code, but are quote unquote good at AI, have skills in AI, AI skills. There's a lot I have wrong with this. There's a lot that pisses me off about this specific quote. More so from the fact that this is coming from a billionaire who practically made it big by taking a huge risk on video game design back in the early 2000s, and then just became like a dude. Just became a rich guy living in wherever the hell that has mountains and lakes and beaches and stuff, and he just surfs now, I guess. I don't know. It beats me, man. Like, I get it, right? I get it, right? Obviously, we need to have a specific amount of knowledge about, because there's no way we can close this box. We're going to have to continuously learn and improve with AI. AI is going to be a constant. There's no going around that, right? But to say that having experience in AI is going to be more effective, it's going to be more proficient, it's going to be better than someone who just has coding skills is absurd to me. He might be right even, right? That's the crazy part. He might be right. But why do I want to believe him? Why would there be a specific reason for me to believe him, right? I look at AI like this, right? When we were making computer languages, we first had to go to the very basics with assembly, right? Something, one of the oldest languages that has ever existed. Something that was pretty much designed to just give something instructions, right? And these instructions were just moving data in between different memory cells, registers, that's what they're called. Different registers, that's basically it. Moving numbers around in specific registers and then being able to do things with those registers in a specific way, right? Having knowledge of that is important to have knowledge of something like, for example, the language C or C++ or all these other languages that then compile your code that is more higher level into something that's lower level. Having knowledge of that, even if you don't see it, I think it's still important. Very important. And the fact that he's just brushing this off as a specifically unuseful, like pretty much obsolete skill is absurd to me, right? Because in order to know a computer, in order to understand how a computer works, you need to understand the inner concepts of a computer, how the computer operates, right? And if people start relying too heavily on AI and then use this to specifically write code that they don't understand, then how are we going to get anything done, right? AI is as susceptible to this stuff as anyone else, right? There was like a couple weeks ago another story that came out where it was literally, there was a, it was IBM, I think, or no, it was Anthropic, who used Claude to create a vending machine that sold products and was given its own directive, do whatever you want, but you have to be within these specific guidelines, you have to be, you know, obviously to our terms and services, but also try to be as most business adaptable as possible. You know what happened at the end of that? Obviously, I'm paraphrasing here. But the machine itself just started, a bunch of people started asking for tungsten cubes. And then the AI started ordering a surplus of tungsten cubes. It was so excited to sell tungsten cubes that it started selling them at a loss because it was trying to get its product out there, right? That was its directive. AI is terrible at making its own adaptations, which is why I don't trust it that often. Case in point. So if we're gonna use AI, we can't fully rely on it. We can't allow ourselves to delude our proclivities into understanding the prompts, how to make a good prompt, because it's not. You're just reworking creativity at that point. That's the fear here, right? We're just destroying the human soul at this point. That's the fear. What are we going to do then, right? Anyway, besides the point. Today we're going to talk about Into the Breach, which again I have discussed previously in a year ago. It was probably a long time ago. Yeah, I should check that out. Into the Breach. Specifically was, I believe, how long ago was this? A long time ago. Probably out Gander 2024-ish, somewhere around there. No, wait a minute. Yeah, 2025, if we work it back. No, it'd be somewhere around like, yeah, it'd probably be somewhere around like maybe March 2024, if I had to guess, which was more than a year ago, which is crazy to me. Absolutely wild to me. This game specifically has a lot of interesting goopy details to go over, specifically regarding how it deals with sacrifice, understanding cost and effectiveness within a system, and how to learn a system and how to make a system fun. This is a genuine, I guess, hallmark of indie game design, showing how to make a game fun, as broad as that term is. How to make it fun while you still have to give stuff up and use your brain from time to time. Because obviously there are games out there that just reward you from having the fastest reaction time, having the fastest knowledge, having the fastest and quickest ideas. But this game is more taken aback. And we'll get into all of that after we go to what happened specifically with Subset Games. Where did they come from? How did they make this game? What was their philosophy behind designing this game, right? We went over most of the general history of Subset Games back when we covered Faster Than Light, which was actually probably during the start of the year, which was somewhere around November, somewhere around there. But for the uninitiated, I'll give you a quick and easy rundown of how this quick team was created, this small team was created. Justin Ma and Matthew Davis were two developers who went to China to find work, because it's way cheaper there. Surprise, surprise, it's not getting better, by the way. They both began to work at 2K Games in China. And they this 2K Games, by the way, is a very big company. It's a publishing and development company that's tied to such games as Civilization, XCOM, and the most popular of all of them, of course, NBA 2K. I love the basketball. I love the hoop. But you know what they worked on, of course? They worked on another sports game that I've never heard in my entire life. They worked on Top Spin 3 for the Wii console, for the Nintendo Wii. Top Spin 3. What is Top Spin 3? It's a tennis game. I'm sure you've heard of it. It seems really popular. They're still making games. Top Spin 2K 2025. Yes. And the cover art even looks AI. It's beautiful. God. It's so crisp. I love it. Give me more. Oh, goodness gracious me, oh my. I personally understand why they left the company. I'll be honest. To me, that sounds, as someone who's inspiring to become part of the gaming industry, to exist in this space, to have a voice or some sort of say into the matters of how games are made, this sucks. To be a part of such a big company and then having the proclivity, the passion to work in this space, and then being put on Top Spin 3 for the Nintendo Wii system is just so sad to me. It's so sad. It's so depressing. But that's neither here nor there. I think afterwards, specifically, when they started getting talking and playing board games with each other, they started talking a lot of shop about design, specifically with strategy games, understanding how
what design makes stuff interesting, and how the stuff works in the first place, right? All that kind of cool nerd stuff that they enjoy talking about. At the end of the day, they started to develop the prototype for a game that became extremely popular in the space, Faster Than Light, FTL. I won't go into the depth of that. If you want to check that out, we have all the episodes on Radio Laurier's website, radiolaurier.com, and then you can see all the posted shows and all the specific episodes posted in each individual little pocket of the website. Go check it out. They made some good improvements with the website. I enjoyed a lot. I personally have a fantastic time looking that over. But hey, they started making the game. They didn't realize they were just going to be popular. They started making the game for fun, right? And they finished the game in around 6 months, and they're like, damn, this is easy. Because it got extremely popular, and they made a polished version. Obviously, it took a couple more years, and then they polished it up and published it, and they became extremely successful. This game was one of the top video games of all time, really. It was up there. Not of all time, of course, but, like, you know. For the time, back in 2012, 2014, that era, right? A lot of famous YouTubers were playing the game. A lot of people like Northern Lion and stuff like that made the game extremely popular, right? And then eventually, it died down a little bit, and they had a lot of time and money to make a new project. They had a little Kickstarter for Into the Breach, which got an insane amount of money for it. They just aimed for $10,000, and they got $200,000, I believe, which was absolutely wild. And they had a less time constraint because they weren't completely starving. Or they weren't like, you know, they were not living on savings, pretty much. They could actually extend out a little bit and exist more so with a more polished product. And they didn't have to worry too much about success or really making the game, you know. They wanted to make the game fun. That's the main thing, right? They didn't really care too much about making the game more successful than Faster Than Light. There's the issue a lot with game developers that I see, specifically in the space, where they try so hard to make a game that's better than the one they made before, right? It doesn't have to be better. It just has to be different, right? Even if it doesn't necessarily give you the same success, the whole idea is that you still have the passion for it. Because if you start burning out and you just divest so much time into making this product that you don't even care about it anymore, what's the point, you know? So they realized this, and they just wanted to take a more relaxed approach to it, right? And they started making the game, which I started getting back into. I like this game a lot. As much as I hate it, as much as I despise it a lot, I also love this game a lot, you know? As much as that goes against each other, I think there's still some modicum of truth to that. Let's see. So, what is this game in general, right? We've talked specifically about how they came together and how they started to work on it and a bit of their philosophy, right? But how does this game even work in the first place? And I'm glad you asked. This game is a very special game because it has a lot of choices, I'd like to say, with a lot of roguelikes, you can see. I like roguelikes. Sue me, all right? I enjoy a good roguelike. And specifically the concept of being able to make your own decisions and making each run different. You have a bunch of different islands divided into different sects, each with their own special missions and objectives, right? As you complete these regions, these different sections of the map, depending on which island you go to, the region touching the borders become available, so you can unlock more parts of the map as you progress. Eventually, the map then closes down after you complete, I think, 5 missions, give or take, and you have to fight a final boss, which then gives you, each of these regions give you either energy, which are your lives, and exceeding your lives then gives you a better chance of surviving the attacks, the onslaught, and reputation, which can be spent on weapons, upgrades, and more energy. You control the basic idea now, as we've gotten over the more abstract concepts, we can dive into the more fun concepts. You control a squadron of mechs. The Gundam, whatever you want to call them, gigantic robot figures that have a pilot inside of them that control them. And you control, you have the full autonomy of all of these robots that try are trying to, in each region, take out the Vec, which are this alien, it's more of a parasitic creature, right? Because the whole idea about this game is that they've consumed Earth, and they've made Earth into their own hive. And now, because of global warming and a bunch of other stuff, there's only a couple islands left in the world. So you have to try to stop each of these infestations on each of the islands. The game requires you not to necessarily react, per se, because the game isn't timed, like I said before. It's strategic. It's like a chessboard, right? It's a grid-based system where you robots have a specific move, amount of moves they can do, right? The amount of tiles they can walk on, and have a specific attack pattern based on which weapons they have equipped, or specifically on the loadout of your squad, right? There's a bunch of different squads you can pick on, which we will maybe discuss if I have enough time, of course. What was I talking about specifically? You know that moment where you're just, like, completely zoned in on something, and then you snap out of it? And then that was me in that specific instance. That was crazy. I didn't know where I was at the moment. I was just in the game for a second there. That's crazy. Anyway, you have specific... You have, like, the specific layout of the board. You have a bunch of the enemies who are also on the board, and you can move your characters, your mechs, based on the movement of them, right? And they have a specific amount of health, how much damage they can take, and also the specific weapons they have on deck. And also the pilot that's piloting them also gives them specific benefits, right? The interesting thing, the thing that we'll talk more in depth about and what they specifically talk about when they're talking about their game philosophy, is that the Vex attacks, the enemy's attacks are telegraphed. What do I mean by that? Basically, the enemy has a specific attack pattern as well, right? They have their own moveset for each enemy that shows you what they will do on a specific turn. They will execute this attack no matter what. So what you can do in specific instances, you don't have to necessarily just kill enemies, right? You have to specifically think of a strategic outcome where you can move enemies to your advantage, to be able to either get them out of the way of specific buildings, to make sure they don't hit specific buildings, or trying to attack their own kind. Use them to attack them, which makes it such a more interesting mechanic, in my personal opinion. They've taken this specific idea of this kind of XCOM turn-based strategy game, micromanaging specific attacks and all that kind of stuff, and made it into a more cohesive system by allowing the player to figure out the specific puzzle, right? There will be specific things I talk about in the future that kind of counteract this idea, but the interesting idea is still here. It still exists here, which is perfect, and executed it very well. The game takes its stride in analyzing these risks. Each of the mechs are controlled by a pilot. Each of them can be upgraded through killing Vex and getting help with perks that make them excel better, right? So you can obviously, during when your downtime between levels, you can obviously swap out different pilots depending on their abilities, right? You can swap out specific weapons depending on whether or not they are better for specific mechs. Of course, they have specific dependencies based on their type, but that's a little bit more complicated. I'm not going to get too deep into that. There's a lot of intricacies about this game, right? And the main crux, the main thing that makes it a roguelike, is the idea of either when you succeed or when you fail, the timeline, the specific timeline, you and your crew have to transport to another timeline, right? So once you either succeed in a run or lose in a run, you have to pick one of your pilots that you'll be able to use in the next run, which are all still upgraded to the capacity that they were when they were doing the run, which I think is such an also very, very cool, unique concept, right? Because then you start getting attached to these characters. You're like, dang, look at this guy. I had him for like 10 runs already, and he's doing great, right? specifically with all the new updates as well. Like 3 years ago, they added an advancement update where they added a bunch of new mechanics and new perks to all of the pilots, which made the game so much more juicy as well, because it's not just like your mech gets +2 HP and stuff like that, which is good for beginners. But then they started advancing through the concepts and gave them new perks, new stat, new buffs, new debuffs, all that kind of stuff. It just made the game so much more enticing. So, we've talked a bit about the game now. I'm sure you're up to date. If you don't fully get it, just look up a few gameplay videos. I'm sure you'll find a couple that pique your interest. A lot of this stuff is just punching bugs, trying to make sure they don't hit the buildings. And it kind of goes in depth to their design philosophy. From the interviews I've watched, they always start with some prototype or experiment with ideas. For Faster Than Light, it was trying to figure out how they wanted the combat system to line up. Like, with specifically how they wanted to see the Starfleet combat, right? You control a ship in this game, in Faster Than Light, this specific game. And you have to attack the opposing ship. But the idea was that it's just two separate ships. They were trying to specifically experiment with directionary stuff, trying to react to dodging attacks and stuff, which didn't really work. And specifically with also having the crew management system up as well. It made a lot more sense that you could pause the game, assess the situation, and try to react to specific attacks and stuff like that. But how do you, specifically the idea right here, right, is how do you make that interesting? How do you make combat interesting? How do you make trying to micromanage specific weapons and stuff like that fun? How do you make learning these mechanics fun? In Into the Breach case, you have interesting elements that came up through experimenting with the core concepts as well. They wanted to have collateral damage, assessing risks, and making sacrifices with the lives lost in the buildings or pilots in mechs. But anyone who's been in the AA space knows about these types of games. Darkest Dungeon, for example, or Don't Starve. Have these specific extreme survival mechanics, where Darkest Dungeon has a more eldritch angle, and I think Don't Starve has a more interesting, like, not more interesting, but has a different, like, fairy tale kind of approach, a more cartoonish style to it. But that angle kind of makes the core gameplay more, like, tense, but also fun at the same time. That's the core difference. In these types of games, we don't necessarily get our enjoyment just from killing enemies, right? We don't get our enjoyment just by, like, especially with these types of strategy games that don't require on reaction time, and we can't attribute our success just to how fast we click the buttons, right? In these types of games, tension and release comes from being able to mitigate it, to avoid it. Rather than attempting to succeed in these games, we're just getting pleasure out of being able to defend ourselves, whether that intends defending your party, your favorite pilot or your favorite crew member or your favorite adventurer inside the Eldritch Dungeon. Just being able to put that threat off for the time being, being able to mitigate that instead of being able to put yourself out there and failing at trying to defeat the enemies, right? Because if it was just that, you would have a lot of collateral damage. There would be no specific way you would be able to do that. It's why I have to look at these specific games in a completely different angle when I've been recently getting back into it. The game and other examples of these types of games that require you to sacrifice and give up specific resources to be able to confer a benefit later, they require you to unlearn these specific core concepts of games in this genre. It's about skirting the line on discovery and reward. Discovery, in the sense, means the idea of learning the mechanics of the game. Being able to have the reward of knowing and seeing these different things chain up. Like, for example, in Into the Breach, there are specific times where I'm like, whew, that was a close one. But, like, being able to have a Vec being pushed to a specific direction, being able to shoot its own guy, which kills it, which stops it from attacking another building, which then allows me to free up another guy, which then moves to a specific location to defeat another guy that was attacking another building. It just clicks. It's just like that, right? Once you see it, you can solve it. Of course, there's always risk involved, and of course, there's going to be ways that are, there's going to be specific instances, which is perhaps one of the drawbacks that I've mentioned before. The idea of RNG, because these are not specifically designed levels, right? There's no specific way that you can make a completely balanced game through RNG. There's no way you can do that. But the idea you can make that fun is trying to challenge yourself to be able to defeat these challenges, even though it might be a little bit unfair, right? You might be a little bit masochistic, but that's besides the point. Look, we can get over that, right? We can have a little masochism with our fun. We can have a little bit of blood with our treats. You know what I'm saying? That's the point of these kind of games. You're supposed to give yourself a little bit of flack for not being able to defeat all of the guys, but at the same time, being able to mitigate what they do to you. As a developer, if you can make this process of learning the mechanics fun, if you can make this process of being able to understand how you are sacrificing your dudes and what you're able to gain through knowing the concepts of this stuff, understanding and optimizing risk, and punching giant bugs in the face, then you can get the player to do anything and learn anything, right? Even if it's more abstract in the case of Into the Breach, right? This game has a lot of rewards that you get from understanding and being able to assess, like, why you want to do something. It's not that there's a right or wrong answer. You might have a specific instance where you have a cool character that you want to save for another run. So instead of letting them sacrifice themselves to save one energy, you might let those hundred of people die, right? It's just the matter of things, right? You know, it's a choice of the lesser evil, because it might help out in specific runs in the future, right? Or in different timelines. Or you know what? It's all screwed up with time travel. I'm sick of it. Also, a neat little interesting time is the tidbit. Chris Avellone, I forget how his name is pronounced. Apologies. Wrote the dialogue for this game. He seems like a very unknowing person, specifically in the space, but he was one of the most fundamental game designers back in the late 90s and early 2000s. He worked on a lot of very influential titles, that's what I'm trying to say here. He made a lot of contributions to the space, specifically in the Fallout franchise and a bunch of other stuff. Perhaps something I might talk about in the future episodes. Stay tuned. You never know, I might get a little into the Fallout, perhaps. A little bit of the earlier games, because the later games are a little bit more mainstream, a little bit more AAA. I like the older games. They were a little bit more, you know, lower, smaller in scale. You know what I'm saying? You know, these games, they got too much going on nowadays. I can't even keep up with them anymore. What the hell's going on? So, I thought it'd be quite interesting if we went through some of the different squads. What are they doing out there? They are moving a gigantic fridge. That's a Herculean task. I hope they're going to be all right. Let's quickly go over some of the squads here. I'm going to go over them based on my favorite ones first, and we'll go down the list. We should probably start first with the specific more common ones, and we'll go into the more interesting ones later. The advanced edition ones, the ones that were added later in the thing. So, we can start with one of my favorite ones, which included, I believe, we'll talk about the one I was playing recently. How about that? Blitzkrieg is a specific squad that requires you to use electricity to your advantage, right? So the idea here is that you have a very powerful weapon, which is a gigantic Tesla coil that is strapped to one of your mechs. A gigantic Tesla coil that chains lightning throughout all of the other vechs within a specific vicinity, right? So they chain off each other. If they're adjacent to each other, then they go to the next guy, then the next guy, the next guy. Problem is, though, is that they can also go to your own mechs, your own squad. So they deal damage to your own crew, which is not good, which is the problem with this specific one, which is why I happen to having such a hard time with it. besides the point. This specific one was very interesting to me because it has a lot to do with making sure your positioning is correct. Making sure that you can chain stuff up so that you can try to get the most damage possible while also making sure you don't sacrifice too much in the process, right? There's a few other mechs that come with this. So you have the Lightning mech, which is the Tesla Coil guy I mentioned. You have the Hook mech, which is able to pull either your allies or enemies towards you, which allows you to perhaps stop a attack on a building, for example, right? And also could help chain up more lightning attacks. A special thing about this mech is that it has the Tough property, which allows it to take less damage. So when you're pumping your guys full of lightning, it won't deal as much damage to the Hook mech. The last mech is the Boulder mech. The fun thing about this one as well is that it helps you chain lightning as well, in the sense that you can throw a gigantic boulder onto the battlefield, which then allows you to then help chain lightning even more. Just get the entire thing involved, you know? It also helps push, and it helps mitigate specific things as well. Push mechs, Vex into other, you know, mechs perhaps, or just deal damage on its own. The problem with this one is that there's specific achievements attached to each different type of squad, right? So with Blitzkrieg, there's a few achievements resulting in, I believe, having dealt like a specific amount of damage and stuff like that. Having your chain, your Tesla Coil, your chain whip, that's what it's called, attack through 10 tiles. So have 10 tiles that are affected by the chain whip, which sounds pretty impossible until you get there's a specific upgrade that you can get for this specific weapon that allows you to chain through buildings without dealing damage to the buildings. So you can chain lightning through the entire system without having to deal damage to, like, you can get a bigger area without having to affect your mechs themselves, right? Which I think is a very cool concept that on its own. Problem is that it's just one of the achievements. Like, all the other achievements are great, don't get me wrong. I like all the other achievements because they kind of like challenge you in those specific concepts. The other one is just a speed run. Finish the first two corporate islands in 30 minutes, right? Come on. Like, I can't get through the first island within an hour. Like, what are we doing here? That's not true. Actually, I got through the first island in 30 minutes, but you can't get through two islands in 30 minutes. That's ridiculous. That's a little bit ridiculous, in my opinion. The thing is, though, you might think, like, what's the big idea? Is this an achievement, right? No. Here's the thing. They make achievements more interesting in this game, not only because they're, like, little challenges you can try to get yourself to complete within the specific runs that you do, to make the game a little bit more interesting, to give a little bit more challenge, but also they provide you with a currency outside of any of the actual game itself. This currency can buy new mechs, right? And the thing is that I've been trying for the past 3 years to get the secret squad. I'm not going to spoil it, of course, but I know what it is. Yada yada. It's a secret squad that requires 25 coins, right? So that requires you to complete pretty much all of the achievements in all of the different starting squads, including, right? So there's Riftwalkers, Rusting Hulks, etc. But there's also Custom Squad, which allows you to pick any robot, any mech from any type of squad. And also Random Squad, which is a completely random layout it gives you, but you can also randomize it however you want. So you can keep rolling until you get something good. Right? So, that's pretty much the idea. And these achievements get really hard when you get to these specific ones in the entire thing. So, what is next specifically? I think talking with my favorites, I think Heatsinkers and Cataclysm are my favorites with the new update. I think in general as well. They really went hard with this one. So, in the new update, 3 years ago, they added a specific buff called, I think it's called either aggro or something else. Heat engines. Hold on, let me double check. I'm going into the mainframe. Give me a second here. Jeez. It gives you a boost. That's what it's called. It gives you a boost. So a boost specifically gives you more damage and also, I believe, possibly more health on your next either heal or damaging attack, essentially. So what you can do is you can chain this up with all of the other benefits of, you know, the dispersal mech, which has a gigantic flamethrower. Sorry, thermal discharger, apologies. And the quickfire rockets, which are just like a quick boost to your damage, right? Which I think is just a super cool concept. So you can absorb the heat that you give off, because normally fire damages your mechs and damages everything else that tries to step inside of them. But also it gives you a benefit to try to make as much fire as possible, which I just love. I might be a bit of a pyromaniac, but that's besides the point. Tell me something I don't know, am I right? Anyway. One of my other favorite ones is Cataclysm. I just like destroying stuff. I don't know. I like ones that have to do specifically with the environment itself rather than just the mechs, right? I think Heat Sinkers is cool because you have to like try to cover the entire map with fire. In this case, you have to try to cover the entire map with holes. You're trying to make as much holes as possible. So you have the Drill Mech, which I think is the most important one out of all of them, which has a seismic capacitor, which basically is a gigantic damn drill, which allows you to kill a unit and flip its attack, which makes it target the opposite direction. Additionally, if you kill the unit, it cracks all the adjacent tiles, which basically means if anything gets attack on that tile, if it's cracked, it destroys the tile, and if they're not flying, then they immediately sink to the bottom, right? This is what I mean by trying to figure out specific strategies in understanding the concept. There are specific things that you enjoy about these things, like there are specific mechs that I don't really enjoy. Bomber mechs is one, because it did have more to do with like summoning stuff and try to get like stuff on the board, which is hard to do sometimes. But these specific mechs give you a lot of different challenges when you're trying to understand all the different concepts in the game, right? Like specifically with, I believe Hazardous Mechs was really interesting as well, because each of these mechs' attacks pretty much deal damage to themselves. But the idea is they have a specific passive ability on one of the mechs that allows you to heal back damage when you hurt other enemy, when you kill other enemies, when you kill other Vex. So when you kill a Vex, you can easily get your health back, no problem, no biggie small. What it has to do with specifically other different abilities, though, I believe was, what was it called again? Zenith Guard, I believe? No. Rusting Hulks, perhaps. Yeah, Rusting Hulks. This was interesting, because it has like a specific mech, a jet mech, just a plane, pretty much, that does aerial bombs. So you create smoke in a specific tile, which disrupts any attack that steps inside of it. Any attack that's inside of that smoke cannot be triggered. But also gives you another passive ability, the Storm Generator, which allows you to damage all creatures, all enemies in smoke. What's interesting is it turns this kind of already negative effect on the board and allows you to use that to your advantage. I love using all the different like specific mechanics regarding terrain and different, you know, environmental risks and turning them into a bonus. That's like my favorite part about a lot of these different squads. Of course, like, you know, they have their different advantages and disadvantages, yada yada. But I think a lot of it's really interesting. Especially when you... Oh no. Yeah, I spilled everywhere. That's funny. Especially when you have to go into understanding how these different concepts work. Right? And I think that's the main thing, right? If you can divulge yourself into creating such a system that allows you to not only feel smart when you're playing it, but also still be repeatedly challenged throughout of it, no matter what happens. Even if there's a little bit of RNG, I think that's a very, very cool concept. I think that has a lot to do with the amount of, I guess, efficiency you have as a developer, the amount of effectiveness you're putting into the game. I don't know. I just find this game very interesting. I try it out for yourself if you're interested, of course. But I think a lot of this game has to do a lot with understanding a system in a way that allows you to actually, you know, understand it in a way. In a sense, in a manner of speaking. Either way. If you're interested as well, I made an episode a while ago. I believe it was episode 9, where I talked about a game called Baba Is You. It's a game called Baba Is You, and it has a lot of puzzle elements where you have to create sentences and stuff like that and try to solve puzzles based on different, like, script-type language, trying to understand how the rules, you can bend them to make them conform to your own will. It's that same kind of self-discovery, which is why the creator of Baba Is You made Into the Breach clone, sort of, not necessarily a clone. Mobile Suit Baba is what it's called. Thank you. Mobile Suit Baba is really interesting because it has the same elements of the game, but instead of having enemies on the screen, it just has a bunch of different stuff. So it's more puzzle-based, of course, because it can't have the random elements because it would just be nonsense at that point, right? You couldn't create sentences and structure through just randomly generated stuff. Unless you were an AI, whatever. But this game is interesting in the sense that it takes those mechanics that were just established and it kind of feeds into them by allowing you to create different sentences and structures throughout the game itself. Like, it already, like, iterating off this very, very cool concept, right, of breaking the rules, right? Which I think is also very interesting. I like this space a lot. It's just really cool to see a lot of this stuff, like, trying to evolve and people, like, bouncing off other people's ideas and stuff like that. You can create something that allows you to get inspired and make something else that is inspired by it. It's really cool. It's really cool. So go try it out. Mobile Suit Baba is $4 on itch.io, so if you want to get that, go ahead. And it's Into the Breach is 65% off. 65% off. You'd be shooting yourself in the leg if you didn't get it. I'm just saying. Into the Breach and Faster Than Light, $8. That's a steal, ladles and germs. Ladles and germs, what are you doing, man? There was another game I was also interested in, well, Tactical Breach Wizards. And it had to do with Faster Than Light, but the Into the Breach style of gameplay as well, where you had a bunch of tiles and stuff, but it was more XCOM-esque. It had a lot more to do with, like, you know, specific abilities regarding the different characters you play. It also had a little bit of humor to it as well, regarding how urban fantasy kind of collided with it. It was just really interesting. I like it a lot. I might get it sometime. I don't know. It's still a bit pricey. But, you know, when I have disposable income, perhaps I will. Once I get a job. Which we'll see. Again, this is going to be one of my last episodes, so I might as well get this out of the way as well. I will probably stick to the every second week schedule, depending on my availability. Because I will not be necessarily studying through this time, but I will have a job. So it will be getting a little tricky from time to time. But I think I will be able to make the commutes. Should be all right. Most of it's online anyway, so I'm not too worried. But just know, I might or may not be able to put all my effort into it. But my goal is to definitely get more hosts, get more guests on, get more people on, get more involved in the space, you know what I'm saying? Just have a more fun time in the space. So generally, I don't know where the show will go, but I'm aiming for 60 episodes. That's my goal. So if I don't care if it takes me 10 years. I'm getting there, all right? I think it's a reasonable goal, and I hope you follow along with me. So, if you don't take anything away from this, just keep on learning and keep on playing them games, man. Have fun with it. But also make sure you're working on yourself. And then on. That's the show. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye. Have a nice sleep now. Bye-bye now. See you. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.